Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, December 14th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll find out how you can support local filmmaker Lyle Hebert with his upcoming film. We'll learn about a donation drive for Syrian refugee families. And the Juno Public Health Center will be here to tell us about their holiday open house and free flu immunizations. Those interviews, National Native News Writers Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 35 degrees at the Juno Airport, 36 in Gustavus, and 34 in Hoonah.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A settlement in the Fairbanks 4 case that would throw out murder convictions is pending. A judge considering whether the men were wrongfully convicted of the 1997 murder of John Hartman is awaiting justification of the settlement by attorneys. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The settlement would free George Freese, Kevin Pease, and Eugene Vent. Marvin Roberts is already out on parole. The deal stipulates that the four will withdraw a post-conviction relief suit and not pursue compensation for wrongful conviction. Superior Court Judge Paul Lyle has questioned the legality of freeing men the state maintains are guilty and wants the right to retry if new information becomes available about John Hartman's murder. Lyle has given attorneys until December 20th to justify or alter the agreement. Tenenbaum Chiefs Conference Justice Task Force Chair Shirley Lee spoke against the proposed settlement at a Friday rally for the Fairbanks Four.
But we're so desperate to see them out that we're willing to accept things we shouldn't have to.
Of course they're going to take that deal. They're dreaming of being at home where it's warm with their family, where they're loved and safe.
Fairbanks 4 supporter Misty Nicolai challenged Alaska Governor Bill Walker to step forward and free the men. The current situation follows a five-week hearing on the post-conviction relief petitions that Judge Lyle anticipates taking more than 6 months to rule on. I'm Dan Bross.
The Montana Law Enforcement Academy graduated more than two dozen officers this month. Many are Native American, as Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Montana Law Enforcement Academy Administrator Glenn Steiner says this graduating class includes 13 Native Americans. That's more Native officers than any other basic course in the Academy's history.
It's a combination of a couple things. One is just vacancies. You know, the stars have aligned and they've managed to send some folks here. And the other one, I think my understanding is from the Blackfeet tribal law enforcement is they have had an increase in funding, and that has allowed them to hire some folks and get them down here.
Blackfeet Tribal Chief Earl Oldperson led a brief ceremony for tribal graduates whose affiliations also include the Fort Peck Assiniboine and Sioux and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. For National Native News, I'm Edward O'Brien in Missoula, Montana.
More details are emerging about the recent announcement of a national investigation into missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls in Canada. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
In making the announcement of a probe into the missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also stressed the need for a stronger relationship with the country's First Nations. The previous government of Stephen Harper refused to call an inquiry, even though official reports show a disproportionate number of female homicide victims in Canada are Aboriginal. Canada's Justice Minister, Jody Wilson-Raybould, herself a former First Nations chief, says there will be consultations with families of victims over the next couple of months. She wants their input on what the goals of the national inquiry should be.
These women, their families, their children have been left to grieve without answers. For so many of those left behind, they carry this pain and loss with them every day.
Last year, a report from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police suggested that Native women represent just over 4% of the population, but 16% of the homicide victims. In addition, the Minister for the Status of Women, Patty Haidu, said the government recognizes that racism, marginalization, sexism, and poverty have contributed to the ongoing tragedy of the murdered and missing, and the inquiry is needed to address the issues and recommend ways to prevent future violence. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 5th Annual Striking Eagle Basketball Tournament and Education Fair, January 8. Information on the event and services at 505-842-9003, extension 109.
Kwanek Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kwanek's news programming. Learn more at knva.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, December 14th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. On the show now is filmmaker Lyle Hebert. Welcome to the show, Lyle.
Thank you, Scott.
Also, retired union rep Kim Metcalf. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thanks, Scott.
And also publisher and event coordinator Peter Metcalf. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you, Scott.
Those are some of the hats you all wear, I know. But we're here to talk about a film that Lyle is finishing up. Lyle, can you tell us the title of this film?
Yeah, Yurok, The Way of the Human Being.
Okay, and tell us how this came to be.
Well, I'll try to condense this, but years ago I read the essay by Harold Napoleon, who's a Yupik Eskimo from Hooper Bay, and titled Yurok, The Way of the Human Being. I was very moved by it. And I always thought that it would make a good film, you know. And about a year ago, I finished this film called Crazy that I did kind of a, I just did on my own. And I felt really good about it because it was kind of coming from my heart. So I wanted to do another film like that. And Yurok definitely fits that prescription, you know. So I think it's just very powerful essay. He's very poetic and profound when he writes that. And so basically his writing is the narrative for the first part of the film.
Okay. Let's get the details on that in a minute. You just referred to these two as saints, Saint Peter and Saint Kim over here. How did you two get involved?
Well, I was thinking what we needed both as a family and our friends and the community is a fun event, and so we started talking about it and decided to be also an opportunity to raise money for Lyle's film project, and so we're having a community potluck and fundraiser.
I
emphasis
like
on fun.
And that's this Wednesday, right?
That's right. It'll be at the St. Anne's Parish Hall beginning at 5 p.m. Lots of people are bringing dishes. There'll be great food. And we also have quite a lineup for auction items. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
And did I see Steve Nelson might be in attendance playing music?
Yes, yeah, Steve Nelson is going to make an appearance to be the DJ. Andy Klein's going to be the auctioneer. We've got an all-star cast. And lots of good auction items that people have donated. And as Peter said, it's a potluck, so we're hoping that everybody that comes can bring a dish. It's a bring your own bottle if you want alcoholic beverages. We've got that lined up. And I just think it will be the party of the season. So.
Oh, cool. Tell us, Lyle, a little bit more about Napoleon's essay, Yurok, The Way of the Human Being. What is the narrative?
Basically, it starts out with the way Yupik life was like, you know, before the coming of white civilization and kind of how their world was in balance with nature. Everything had a spirit to it. And then, you know, when the white man came, that was all right. They weren't taken over. They liked a lot of the inventions that the white man brought, you know. However, then they got clobbered by the Spanish influenza of 1918 that came out of Nome. And it basically, their medicines did not work against this alien illness. And the white man's did to some degree. You know, the Iditarod started there when they brought that serum up to Nome. And so people, according to Harold, lost faith in their culture. And at that time, like all about 60% of Yupiks and Athabascans died from the plague. And the survivors lost faith in their culture. And the missionaries kind of climbed on top of that and said, well, that's because you've been worshiping the wrong things. You know, your culture isn't true, you know. So people didn't pass on their culture to their kids for several generations. So kids kind of grew up in what Harold would call a no man's land, you know. And out of that, Harold thinks a lot of the domestic violence, drinking, and suicide kind of grew out of that after several generations.
Okay, and you call the film a docudrama or
drama docu?
What is that?
Yeah. Well, it starts out with the reenactment of the past, so that's the more dramatic part. Then it goes into what's going on today, and that's the documentary part.
Okay, have you two had a chance to see parts of the film?
I've seen just what's been up on the internet, and but we're setting up things so that we can view. I think it's a 12-minute?
Yeah, 10 or 12 minutes, yeah.
Great.
Of the rough cut.
So there's been a lot of people in this community who have already contributed to Lyle's campaign, and we expect nothing more from them than coming and eating and getting a view of what they help fund.
But if people want to contribute and can't make it, there's an Indiegogo site, Indiegogo. And if you Google Indiegogo and Lyle Hebert, you can get to that site. But, yeah, we're hoping people will come just to, like we said, put some fun in the holiday season.
The happy back in holidays. The merry back in Christmas.
Exactly. They'll be dancing, you know, and good food. You know, hopefully people won't get too bored when they see the film. And so it should be a good time.
And the final product, did you say it was going to be about 30 minutes?
Yeah, around that.
Okay, and you're in post-production now? You're getting close?
Yes.
But it's not cheap. It takes a lot of time. And that
it takes time, but I love doing it. You know, so I'm really glad I've got this thing going. It kind of keeps me going. I really enjoy it a lot. You know, I feel like it's something worthwhile.
Oh, I bet. What has surprised you most, or what have you learned in the production of this?
Well, we filmed at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage, in the sod house and around there, you know, and also out in Chivac. And basically, a lot of enthusiasm from the Yupik people who are in this, you know. And it was just a lot of fun spending time up there with them and going out to Chivac and spending time with John Pingayak and his family. And another thing that made me realize, we flew from Bethel out to Chivac. That took about 50 minutes across the surface of the moon almost. It was like all tundra and winding rivers and little lakes and ponds. It was something I'd never really seen before, you know. So it really made me realize how immense this state is, you know, and how varied it is. Because I kind of get in my own little world down here in Juneau, you know, and which is a very pleasant world, but this is an amazing place, Alaska.
Okay. Well, to support this film, you can go to this fundraiser and to dance and to listen to music and enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of food and really good food, too.
And you'll probably be bumping into a lot of old friends and make some new friends also.
Yeah. So it starts at 5 o'clock Wednesday night at St. Anne's Parish Hall.
Okay. Lyle, when do you think you might release the film?
I'm giving myself some time. So on the Indiegogo site, it's definitely by early June.
Okay.
It might even be, I might even be done with it before then, but I just want to keep on working on it and polishing it, you know.
Kim, will you give us that website once more?
It's Indiegogo, Indiegogo. com, and just search Indiegogo Lyle Hebert, and what? Lyle is...
Might be... Oh, go ahead.
L-I-S-L-E. Yeah. H-E-B-E-R-T.
And does that refer to, like, independent film go-go? It's sort of a fundraiser, like a Kickstarter kind of a thing, but for film?
No, it's just for all kinds of projects. But yeah, it's another Kickstarter or GoFundMe kind of site.
And I suspect it's very easy. You click on a button and it just takes moments.
What you do, you go up the right-hand corner, I think there's a search section up there, you can type in YuYark, YuYuYARAQ. Just think people can't spell my name.
I found you on Facebook, too, today pretty easily.
Yeah.
And also the event. So.
Just think of him in the French pronunciation, Lille Hébert.
Yeah, I like that.
Très bien.
Very artistique. Très artistique.
Super cool.
Very
All right. Well, anything else anyone would like to add? Did we cover everything?
Well, I think it's kind of neat that we're doing it at the Parish Hall because all three of us here went to St. Anne's School, and that building is a new version of the building we went to school in, but we all kind of started out there. So
yes, I was just up there with Sister Marie and pointed to a corner, and I said, that was my seventh grade class. And I happened to have been on the final eighth grade graduating class back in the days when graduating from eighth grade was like a high school graduation.
Well, great. Peter Metcalf, Kim Metcalf, Lyle Hebert, we'll see you on Wednesday night, St. Anne's Parish Hall from 5 to 8. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, oh, and make Scott. Sure you come back, Lyle, and let us know when you're going to release it and how we can all watch it.
I will.
All right, great.
I went to the guy. Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juneau.org/park/pool. More information at 586-5325.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, December 14th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Michaela Levy. She's owner-operator of Fiddleheads and Ferns and an organizer in the Carry the Future Juneau operation. Is that right, Michaela?
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having us. So we are organizing a baby carrier drive here in Juneau for a nonprofit called Carry the Future. Our goal is to collect 30 carriers in 30 days, and as of today we have 14, so we're doing good.
Nice.
And Carry the Future is a nonprofit that was started down south by a mom, and her initial goal was to collect 100 carriers and $2,500 and send them to Greece for Syrian refugees to carry their babies in this long trek that they have. And as of November 25th, she has distributed over 5,000 carriers, and she only started in September. So it's really exploded, and people are really excited about this, and is a way that they're able to help the Syrian refugees.
All right. And how did you hear about it here in Juneau?
I heard about it through Jamie as well, and because I own a baby and maternity store and I'm very passionate about baby wearing, it was something that I told her I would love to help with. So Fiddleheads and Ferns is a designated drop-off location. You can bring by your gently used or new baby carrier. They're only accepting soft structured carriers, so anything with straps and buckles. The wrap-style carriers take too long to teach them how to use. So they need something that's going to be fast. When the refugees are coming off of the ferries, they only have about 10 or 15 minutes to fit these carriers to them. So it needs to be something that's pretty simple to use. Brands people will be familiar with is the Ergo or the Baby Bjorn, Tula, Abeco, Boba. Those are all brands people will be familiar with. And we would love to have them donated. If you're not able to donate a baby carrier, we're also looking for people to make monetary donations to help us with shipping. This is all volunteer, and it does cost us money to ship them to California so that they can be brought to Greece for the refugees. The other thing we're doing is we're stuffing the carriers with socks and hats and protein bars and such so that when they get them, they'll also have other supplies. So if you don't have a baby carrier, there's other ways that you can help as well.
Okay. I think it probably speaks for itself, but thinking of your inspiration and Jamie's inspiration, why is it important for you guys to help Syrian refugees?
I think as moms, when we see pictures of other families having to carry these babies in their arms or small toddlers having to walk and make this long trek, I think it's the one way that I feel like I can help, even though it's very small. In their world, it's huge and sometimes life-saving, and the difference between them making it and them not.
Okay. How many are you going for again? 30?
We're trying to do 30 carriers in 30 days. If we get more, awesome.
And when are you hoping to be done?
We're hoping to finish by the new year, so that would be awesome. But we will continue going until carriers stop trickling in. We'd like to send them sometime just after the new year.
So it'd be okay if you got more than 30.
It would be awesome if we got more than 30.
What did you say up to?
We're at 14, so yeah. One a day for the month that we've been trying.
Okay. And you are over by the bowling alley, is that right?
Yes, we're located at 607 West 7th Street. It's downtown across from IGA and next to the bowling alley. And we also have a Facebook page, Juneau Families for Carry the Future, if you search on Facebook. And if you're not able to make it to Fiddleheads and Ferns, post on there that you have a carrier you'd like to donate, and somebody will make a point to come pick it up from you.
Okay. And when is Fiddleheads and Ferns open, when, if they do want to drop it off?
We are open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay. Give us the Facebook page once more.
Juneau Families for Carry the Future.
All right. Sounds like a very worthy cause. Thanks for sharing this with us, Michaela.
Thanks so much for having me.
Anything else?
think that was all.
Great. Thanks for coming on the show.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 14th of December, 2015. It was on this date, 1542, Mary Stuart, as an infant, ascended the throne of Scotland after the death of her father, James V. King Henry VIII of England, her great uncle, wanted to unite England and Scotland, and he drew up a treaty arranging the infant's marriage to his son, Edward. The child's mother, however, negotiated a marriage pact with Henry II of France instead. So Mary Stuart grew up in France in the court of Henry II. She got a good education. At the age of 18, though she was thoroughly French, she returned to Scotland to become Mary Queen of Scots. Scotland was Protestant, she was Catholic, but her policy was religious tolerance, and she was beautiful and tall and graceful, and she was popular in Scotland. She had two rather tumultuous marriages. She was deposed. She fled to England to seek help from her cousin Elizabeth, who was on the English throne, who had her imprisoned and put on trial and executed for treason. Her son, James, succeeded Elizabeth to the throne, became King James I of England. It was on this day, 1900, the physicist Max Planck published his theory of quantum mechanics. At a time when physicists believed that the interactions between all physical objects, from atoms to planets, would be predictable, although they couldn't quite understand how light worked. It was Max Planck who proposed that light travels in little packets, like bullets, which seemed impossible. But 5 years later, Einstein took up the idea of light traveling in packets, which he called photons. Einstein later said, "I use up more brain grease on quantum theory than on relativity." And today is the anniversary of the St. Lucia flood of 1287, in which 50,000 people died in the Netherlands, the result of a storm tide similar to Hurricane Sandy in 2012. It also affected the coast of England, dumping silt into the harbors of a number of port cities and redrawing the English coastline. Here's a poem for today by Karim Tayar, entitled On Turning 37. Today you remind yourself that although Buddy Holly was 17 when he first sang Peggy Sue, and that Fitzgerald was 24 when he published This Side of Paradise, and that Dylan was only 21 when he composed Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands in the studio while the other musicians shot pool and played cards. Whitman was 37 when he wrote Song of Myself. Rousseau was 40 when he first picked up a paintbrush in his Paris apartment and began creating those indelible images of the African jungles that were largely responsible for the birth of modern art. And even JFK, he of that perpetual youth and beauty that signaled a departure from the grandfather politics of men like Eisenhower and Truman, was 43 when he took the oath of office for the presidency. In other words, go back to sleep, buddy. There is still plenty of time to climb the mountain, and there is no reason to think that your best days are already behind you. A poem on Turning 37 by Karim Tayar from Magic Carpet Poems, published by Tibat Bach Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with technology products, copy and print shipping, and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch. Thank you.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 14th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 28 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio with me now is Claire Geldhoff. She is a registered nurse at the Juno Public Health Center. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So the Juno Public Health Center, you guys are over there by Twin Lakes, right?
We are. We're the mysterious tan building just tucked up in the woods area. So we're right across from Project Playground.
Okay. So you do have an open house coming up on Friday. I want to talk about that in a minute. In the meantime, Claire, will you give us sort of Juno Public Health Center 101? What are some of the services you provide? Yeah. When can folks go in and who can go in?
Yeah. So we are a clinic. We're available Monday through Friday. Our clinic doors open at 8 o'clock. And then we offer services to anyone and pretty much everyone. So we operate on a sliding fee scale, which means that patients come in based on the number in your household and your monthly income. There's a sliding fee scale discount applied to your cost. So we're really striving to be there for everyone through our services, which are STI screening.
STI?
Sexually transmitted infections. So that's what that is just peeing in a cup. And then we can draw a little bit of blood if needed. We offer immunizations to infants, children, adults as well, based on our eligibility and what people need. We do some family planning services for women. We also do a lot of community outreach and efforts out in the community too, with different organizations. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you have an open house this Friday. Tell us about that.
So this is a great opportunity, and we'd love to see our friends and family from around Juneau. This will be taking place this coming Friday. This is December 18th from 3 o'clock till 6 o'clock. Santa will be there. We'll have some photo op available with Santa. We'll also have some crafts and games available. We'll have some great food. Cider, coffee donated to us generously by Heritage. And then we're giving a tour of our clinic space as well. We've revamped some areas of our child health room. We've got this awesome new school bus exam table, so featuring some fun new changes at the Juno Public Health Center.
And did you already mention that you'll have free flu vaccine?
I did not. So that's another thing. If you're still looking to get flu vaccine, which we recommend for everyone. We'll have the nasal version available, so, and then we'll have the injection too.
What are you seeing right now? What are folks coming in with? It's sort of the season of, you know, cold and flu.
So influenza is definitely out there. I recently it's the eighth leading cause of death in the United States, so highly recommended to get those flu vaccines. And definitely we're always advocating hand washing as well. That's your first line of defense. Wash those hands.
Tell us more about the flu. How do you get it, where, and what do the symptoms look like?
Yeah. So flu is everywhere, lives everywhere. Scott's throwing his hands up in the air. So symptoms, you know, vary from person to person, but people will generally know if you have influenza, you are not feeling good. Fever, aches, pains, chills, runny nose, sore throat. But influenza is a little bit different than the common cold that might knock you out. Influenza will put you out for days, and it's not something I wish on anyone. So we have that free flu available at this event. Juno Public Health.
And for the skeptics out there, I know there's a few that don't like the idea of a flu shot. What would be your advice to them?
So I, flu is helping protect and prevent four strains of influenza. They generate the vaccine every year based on their predicted strains that we're thinking that we'll see. For families that are thinking, hey, I'm a strong, healthy person, I've got a good immunity, I eat really well, I'm active, I'm strong and a healthy guy, one of our nurses on staff a few years ago, she lost a good friend that kind of would categorize himself as the same strong, healthy athlete, climbed mountains all the time down in Wyoming. And he ended up with flu, which progressed into pneumonia and turned into sepsis, and he unfortunately passed away. But that, I think, can demonstrate that even though we may consider ourselves to be strong and really healthy people, this is kind of that preventative aspect of keeping yourself there, too. If anyone has more questions, though, they're more than welcome to contact our nursing staff and help answer in any questions that we can for you.
What's the best way to contact y'all?
So our main line at Juneau Public Health is 465-3353, and that would be the best way if you have any questions.
In the meantime, come down on Friday from 3 to 6 p.m., right?
Yeah, and we're the tan clinic. We have brown trim. We're right across from Project Playground on Twin Lakes.
And this free nasal and injectable flu vaccine you'll be administering, what does that usually cost one?
It depends on what pharmacy you're at. For us, at full cost, it would be $27.44.
Wow. So that's really generous of you all.
And you're keeping strong and healthy.
Absolutely. All right. Friday, December 18th, 3 to 6 p.m., open house at the Juneau Public Health Center. If you have any questions, call 465-3353. Claire Geldof, she's a registered nurse there at the Juneau Public Health Center. Are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
Happy snow, Juneau, and happy season's greetings to all. Thank you very much, Scott, for having me.
You're welcome, Claire. Thanks.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. We'll be right back.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in, open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice-rink or call 586-0410.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on Monday, December 14th, 2015. About 19 minutes to the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host here. We got a few extra minutes on the show today, so I thought I'd play some mudrooms. Here's a story from Andrew Washburn back in the November shenanigans episode of Mudrooms.
Our next storyteller is Andrew Washburn. He refers himself as Mr. Washburn this whole biography. Mr. Washburn is from The Illinois. He moved from Ketchikan to Juneau just over a year ago. Mr. Washburn continues to like Ketchikan. The forest is much prettier there than that around Juneau. He prefers Juneau when it snows, or at least when Mendenhall Lake is frozen smooth for skating. He would like to see a guillotine in the lobby of every museum. Mr. Washburn likes old boats. Mr. Washburn once sat in front of Neil Young at a Chicago Cubs game, but was too nervous to turn around and say hello, though he is a huge fan. Please help me welcome Andrew to the stage.
This story is about me trying to stick it to somebody. If you know me, this wouldn't come as much as a surprise that this is something I like to do. The story takes place about 16 years ago. I had just finished college. I'd moved back in to my parents' home. So it was Mom, Dad, Bob the Beagle. I was broke. I moved in because I was broke, and I needed to make some money, so I got a job. I'd applied for a job at an outdoor sporting goods store in the large metropolitan area of a large Midwestern city. It had five locations. I applied for a job as a sales associate at the main location. They met me during the interview. They sort of got my vibe and decided that I'd be better working in back. So I got a job as transfer driver. My job was to drive between the five locations. Well, when I started, it was four. They added a fifth. So let's say you went into one store and you wanted your triple XL chartreuse yoga pants, but you wanted them actually in purple, and they were at another store. I would go get them from that other store and bring them to you. This is a job done by drones now, I'm pretty sure, certain. But anyway, it was fine. I wouldn't say I enjoyed the job. The pay was miserable, but you know, it was fun driving around, and I got to talk to a lot of the salespeople, and I got great deals on gear, boots, that sort of thing. They opened another store while I was there, and it was right at this moment. Maybe you all remember this moment when sportswear, when activewear became fashion. And so these stores were in this rapid process of, oh, you couldn't get boots there anymore. You couldn't get sleeping bags or tents or backpacks, but you could get a lot of jeans and stretchy pants and hot pants and that sort of thing. And this new store, which was right downtown, was sort of typifying this change. And this kind of chapped my hide, and it probably colored a lot of my work habits. Anyway, I liked most of the people I worked with, except for the manager of that new location, who was always complaining. She was complaining ceaselessly about things were late. Things were the wrong item had gotten transferred. They had coffee stains on them. They were dirty. They smelled like motor oil or marijuana or, you know, just like, I know it was my job to make sure that these things got there fine, but like I said, they weren't paying me very much. So she always complained, and it was my, I really just wanted to stick it to this person before I left. And I was there about a year, and the whole time just brooding on this idea. And I didn't have a great way, but with just a few days left in the job, I remembered something. My mind stretched back a few months earlier to a February night where I was sitting around the kitchen table with my mom, and the familiar scratching of Bob the Beagle came at the back door. She got up, she was closer, and went to let him in, and instead of hearing the door open, I just heard a screech. I got up to investigate and found my mom recoiling in horror As I looked out the door in the porch light, I saw Bob with the frozen corpse of a squirrel, arms up in a scratching motion in his mouth. I didn't know why at the time, but I took the squirrel. I wrapped it in paper towels and put it in a plastic bag and put it in the chest freezer. 4 months later, I figured out why I did that. It was the night before my last day of work, and I decided to get back at this manager for, you know, just the ceaseless complaining. I took the squirrel. I put it in a brand new shoebox I had left in my car. I taped it shut and wrote a note on the front, like, you know, manager, you know, only. I can't remember. I forget what her name was. Anyway, I went to that store on my normal rounds, and I placed the box right on her desk because I really wanted to make sure she was the one to open it. And then I left, like everything was normal. By the time I got back at the end of the day to headquarters, the proverbial squirrel had hit the fan, and what happened was I had hoped that the manager would open it. It is not what happened. In fact, my friend, one of the sales associates, found the box, thinking it was a special order she had made of some fancy trail running shoes, had taken the box, taken it out onto the sales floor to the sales counter where there was a line of customers, and opened it. Now, I don't know exactly what happened then. I like to imagine she screamed, much like my mother at the back door, through the box, having the squirrel describe a fantastic arc through the store, but I don't know if that's happened, but I like to think that it did. What definitely did happen was I spent the last hour of my time as an employee there writing a letter of an apology to both managers at that store, the company owners, the sales associate, and really it's a story about me trying to stick it to somebody, but really it's just a hapless shenanigan. Thanks.
Paula Rohrbacher has been living in Juneau since 1978, when she came up as a Jesuit volunteer for 1 year. She loves her life in Douglas with her family and dogs. She is 4'9.5" tall, which makes her very special in my heart. Come on up, Paula!
Okay, as Tom said, I am 4'9" tall, and the shenanigans I'm going to tell are not necessarily my shenanigans, but the shenanigans that people get up to when confronted with somebody who's short. Okay, there's a way that people who are taller, that means almost anybody, including some 10-year-olds that I know, look at people, especially women who are short. And I know that this won't go over the radio, but this is the way that some taller, mostly women, look at short people, especially me, like this. So all my life, I've struggled with being taken seriously. The first time that I met my husband's family, we went to dinner at my parents-in-law's house, and his sister, first thing she said to me was, "It's so nice to meet someone who's shorter than I am." I get that a lot, actually. I've had several people say that to me. And, you know, even though I usually just smile and nod, what I want to say is I'm so glad that I could bring some joy into your otherwise meaningless life. But that's not the story I want to tell. The story I want to tell is a story about a trip that I took to Skagway with a friend who was living here in Juneau at the time. We went to Skagway, and it was September, I think. So it was getting kind of cool. So I was wearing my brand new parka from moving to Alaska. It was the kind that was blue on the outside and orange on the inside and had the fake fur around the thing, you know. So I thought I was really Alaskan, you know. So I was wearing my parka. And we were walking down the street, and we saw this man who must have been the last remnants of the tourists, you know. He came up and said, can you tell me where the post office is? And, you know, we didn't know. I mean, we weren't from Skagway, but we said, well, we think it's down this way, you know, down the main street. You know. And he said, thank you. And then he looked at me like this. And he said, do you play football? And I said, no. And he said, well, you look like a sturdy little boy. By this time, my friend, Nancy, was literally on the ground, rolling around, laughing. And I said, I'm a grown woman. And he said, oh my God, I am so sorry. And I said, and he just wandered away. So that's when I started growing my hair a little bit longer and wearing things that were a little bit more form-fitting, but it didn't make me grow. So, anyway, those are some of the shenanigans that people get up to when they're confronted by a short person. Thank you.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 14th. It's about 7 minutes until the top of the hour. We just heard a couple stories from, that was Paula Rohrbacher, and before that, Andrew Washburn from the November Shenanigans Mudrooms. Looks like their next show is on January 13th at 7 p.m., and the theme is Second Chances. Great organization. Check them out, mudrooms.org.
This is Bird Note. The canopies of the world's tropical rainforests are green year-round. So are many of the birds within them, from mostly green parrots and sparkling iridescent hummingbirds, to trogons and jacamars with their shiny green backs. Their coloring underscores a fundamental of Darwinian evolution, that an organism's appearance, behavior, and physiology must be adaptive to contribute to a greater overall level of reproductive success. In other words, being green in the tropics means you won't stand out, and you have a better chance of reproducing, especially if you spend much of your time among the glossy leaves up top. As for the vividly colorful birds found throughout the tropics, put them inside the forest, and their iridescent coloring becomes a dark disguise. Tropical birds that live in the shadows near the forest floor, ant birds, oven birds, and wrens, sport earth tones of brown, gray, and black. Even the hummingbirds of the understory, known as hermits, wear drab plumage of gray or brown, or only the dullest green. Camouflage, almost as well suited for the deciduous forests of the north as the rainforests of the tropics. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, Ben Brown will be your host. And we'll get the details on Caroline Goodwin's reading with Ishmael Hope. Emily Thompson will highlight the Parents as Teachers program in early childhood events in the community. We'll learn about the Legal Services Fair Housing Project and about Parents for a Safe Graduation. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more. Live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and online via KTOO.org. Let's take a look at the weather. The Juneau area forecast calls for rain and snow showers tonight with a snow accumulation to 1 inch. Temperatures should be steady around 33 degrees. For Tuesday, the forecast calls for numerous snow and rain showers with snow accumulation to 1 inch again, with the highs around 35. Looking towards Wednesday, mostly cloudy, no call for precipitation, highs around 34. Thursday, snow likely, highs around 34. And getting towards the weekend on Friday, mostly cloudy, a chance of snow, highs around 33. All right. Well, thanks again for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same frequency.